Hi, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
So we are back for part three of the Sex and the City movie.
Part three.
It is moments after we finished part two.
We are
so
going.
I don't really have any witty banter to add
to
this
one.
No,
or any butthole dons.
No. All right. So we'll just get going in part three. We start off exactly where we left off. We're kind of seeing the damage that's been done to her apartment, or just all the boxes, all the things that have arrived. And it's time to get an assistant.
There was no better time I could think of to hire an assistant.
Well, this was purposefully done. MPK kind of felt like Carrie would have thought the girls have had enough. Mm. And in fact, in general, the girls and Carrie aren't really going to talk about Big a whole lot. I'm sure it's brought up from time to time, but
I feel like we've done this for 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thought was she's going to need someone else to talk to about this. And he also wanted to bring in a 20-something woman. He wanted to bring in kind of the ladies were mostly 30-something, but wanted to bring in a younger perspective at this point. And we start, as all good things should start, with Annalee Ashford.
No. I do not lift boxes.
I just love her. I think she's so great.
She's great.
A Tony Award winner. Yeah, she won a Tony Award for You Can't Take It With You. She was the original Margot in Legally Blonde, the original Lauren in Kinky Boots. She was Sylvia in the revival of Sylvia. She was Dot in the revival of Sunday Park with George.
Which Mike and I saw.
We did see. And she's just a lovely person, too. I only met her one time, but she's just a sweet, sweet, sweet girl.
So speaking of pooping your pants, when Mike and I saw Sunday in the Park with George, we spent a lot of money. Mike and I are like bargain ticket buyers, but we spent over $100 each for those seats. It was, I keep wanting to say Jake Gyllenhaal. I want to say Ryan Gosling. Jake Gyllenhaal and Annalee Ashford in Sunday at the Park with George, the most recent revival. Gorgeous. But Mike had gotten like a stomach flu that week.
Yeah, I was not well that week.
No. You were so thin.
Oh, thank you. I need a stomach flu.
No, you don't.
But it was great. I mean, it was such a... I'm sure I have stated before, probably not on the podcast, that musical is my favorite piece of art.
By man.
Ever created. James Lapine asked me the same thing. I just love that show, and it was a beautiful production. They were both so great in it. It was at the Hudson Theater, and yeah, we spent a little bit of money.
Worth it. Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
So,
but I just remember I was so worried for you because, like,
I got through it. I was happy for intermission.
Yeah. And I never got anything.
Yeah, and she doesn't lift boxes, but she would like a career in fashion.
This is not non-fat.
So the one thing that I noticed about this was I feel like this is around-ish the time when, like, iced coffee was really becoming a thing.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't really know. The only way that I relate to this is in the opposite way, in which I used to love a sugar-free vanilla latte, and they would always make it with non-fat milk because I'd asked for sugar-free. And I'm like, I'm just avoiding the sugar. I'll take all the fat you want to give me.
Yeah.
And I would get so annoyed.
So when this was out, I was like in my early 20s. And I remember that, like, I didn't really care about artificial sweeteners at the time and all that stuff. So I would often drink, like, my order was like a non-fat sugar-free hazelnut latte with an extra shot of espresso. And then I was so annoyed with myself. One time I just heard myself saying it out loud that I was so annoyed that I was like, I'm just going to start drinking black coffee. And that's what I drink now.
Yeah, I don't drink black coffee, but I did stop with the fancy stuff. So my favorite thing turned into a double tall soy latte, which is also like $5 or $6.
Coffee?
No, I like to add a little something to it. I can drink black coffee. I don't mind it.
No,
but
I
like
love,
to add a,
yeah.
a splash mean, of something creamy.
I love your books. Your shit's brilliant.
Yeah, we go to Bridget Everett next.
Yeah.
Bridget Everett is huge in the New York cabaret and
right.
comedy scene,
well, and
obviously.
At this point, I believe she was just like her band, Bridget Everett and the Tender Moments.
Yeah, probably. And Sarah Jessica has been a fan of hers for a very, very long time. You might recognize her from Unbelievable. She played Colleen Daugherty in that. She did a lot of work on Inside Amy Schumer. Bridget Everett is Amy Schumer's favorite comedian, so she has a small part in Trainwreck as well. She's hilarious. Like
she had that her own
performer.
Movie.
What was her own movie?
Patty Cakes.
She was on a TV series called Camping that I think only went for one season. And she's drunk, but she can type.
Never made it to bed last night, but I type like a motherfucker.
So that was also me in 2008.
So then we get to Peter Y. Kim is this next actor. I don't really know him. I just know that he's overqualified and wears heels.
Mm-hmm. Which is like most people in New York City.
Yeah. Which is all to bring us to Louise from St. Louis.
Have you ever been a personal assistant?
No, but I'm the oldest of six kids, so I'm sure I can handle anything you got.
Jennifer Hudson.
And Jennifer Hudson. And to be clear, Michael Patrick King brought in an African-American woman at the request of African-American women who were fans of the show and would say to him, we love your show. Where are the sisters? Like, where are we? And so he specifically set out to cast this role to bring in someone, you know, we've talked about it before. This show is very, very Caucasian.
Yeah, the show is far too white. And
so that was sort of the specific purpose of this. And, you know, she mentions that she's living in a one-bedroom apartment with three roommates, which feels very old New York. I didn't know that still happened.
I knew some people when I first moved here, and I'm only saying when I first moved here because that was when I was hanging out with people that were younger, that shared one-bedroom apartments. I'm sure maybe, like, students would still share that, but I think, yes, that's far too many people. Because a one-bedroom apartment in New York is not big.
Yeah, very, very small. So maybe someone sleeps in the living room.
Yeah,
maybe
someone sleeps
in the living room.
Maybe, like, there's partitions or those, like, curtains. Yeah. I don't know.
And she moved to New York to fall in love.
Which, once again, not the place to do it.
Yeah, not really.
And she finds that out, so.
Yeah. And Carrie notices her patchwork denim Louis Vuitton bag, and which, for the record, does retail for about $2,500 to $3,000.
Right. And this was during that time when there were all of those Louis Vuitton bags, like the real crazy ones, which I'm glad we kind of got rid of that phase.
And she says she got it from Bag, Borrow, or Steal, the Netflix for purses. And I'm going to confess that until 2 days ago, when I took the time to look it up, I was convinced this was a fake thing. And it's a real thing.
Oh, I'm sure it would be. I mean, because
I just had no idea.
Do you know about Rent the Runway?
I think I've heard of that before.
So Rent the Runway is pretty similar. Rent the Runway is where you can rent, like, clothes. It's mostly, for the longest time, it was mostly just, like, you would rent formal wear, which is easy for women who are like, okay, I want to go to this event, and I don't want to buy a dress that I'm going to wear once. So you can rent one, and they give you, like, two or three different sizes. But now they do this thing called, like, Rent the Runway Unlimited, where you can buy a membership, and then they just send you, like, outfits.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the purse thing, I think, is actually kind of, like, because those types of purses are mostly just, like, a statement, right? And it's, like, as we know now, those purses are so expensive, and especially some of those early Louis Vuitton ones. Like, that's not what is, like, in now, right? So you spent $3,000 on this bag that's not timeless, when now it's, like, I wish I would have gotten the, you know, the black or the brown leather bag.
Very interesting. And now we have a montage. We get a little music playing, and it's basically like Louise unpacking, making phone calls, organizing, and being sassy with the delivery guy.
Ain't nothing or nothing.
That's kind of it.
Well, because he looks at her boobs.
Yeah, pretty. Stares down her cleavage pretty hardcore.
Yeah, it's like perv.
So we get to Miranda looking for a place in Chinatown, and I wrote, okay, maybe this is troublesome.
Maybe?
Let's talk about it, though.
Okay.
Either we're going to portray how someone would look for an apartment in Chinatown, or we're not. And I imagine in 2007, 2008, looking for an apartment, that is one way you would do it.
Really?
Sure. I mean, once again, I wrote, this feels much more old school New York. That I feel like once upon a time, you would kind of like roam the streets and be like, respectable place or like nice person that looks like I want the neighborhood to look like. And then you would go and be like, is this place for rent? I don't know that you do this way still. I feel like it's much more everyone goes through a broker or something
that. We're talking about two different things. I'm just talking about like the comment she makes, and I was like, okay.
But I still think we're either gonna show how someone would look for an apartment or not. Okay. And she's, you know, I mean, I think at that point you'd be like, oh, that's an indication of something. And I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying it's like PC, but I'm saying it's probably pretty accurate for 2007, 2008.
Yeah, the comment she makes is she's walking down the street, and actually Magda makes a comment that it used to be a Ukrainian neighborhood.
Right.
And she's walking through Chinatown, and she says...
White guy with a baby.
Oh, yeah. white guy with a baby, where he is going is where we need to be. And I think the subtext of that is just like somewhere with people that have kids.
Which, I think so too.
Right. But I'm just like, I don't know. It just, it made me, I once again, I know Sex and the City is not the most progressive show on television, therefore wasn't the most progressive TV show or movie. However, I'm like, you could have just said like, person with a kid, you know, like,
sure,
like that's what I'm saying. Like, if that's what you meant, because, and but you know what though, all it is, what that does for me is it just reminds me, and like, it's like, these are the moments that we need to be accountable for, right?
Yes, I see what you're saying.
You know, anyway.
Just for the record, this apartment is closer to Manhattan Bridge than Brooklyn, but now I'm kind of splitting hairs here. So we're at Charlotte's, and we're reading Lily's Cinderella, and Carrie tries to explain that it's just a fairy tale, but Lily wants to hear it again.
And another one bites the dust.
And Charlotte comes home after going to the doctor, and we get some news.
Charlotte is pregnant.
Yeah, she's pregnant, and I actually know a couple who went through this, a couple who was told that she would never get pregnant. And so they adopted a little boy, and like literally a month later, she got pregnant.
Wow.
And had a little boy. Yeah. And then they were like, well, we have two little boys. And the doctor was like, that's a fluke. Like, it's a miracle that you got pregnant. And they really wanted a little girl. So they adopted a little girl. And a month later, she got pregnant and had a little girl. And now they have two little boys and two little girls.
And then they got a dog. And a month and then, later, yeah, she got pregnant.
She was pregnant with a puppy, with a cat. So it does happen. And now we're with Samantha and Smith, and she's been distant, and do you want to talk about it? And I love Samantha's response of like, when have I ever wanted to talk about it?
Yeah, and you seem distant. Distant, you're still in me. I like that line.
Yeah. Smith thinks it's because Samantha's friends got screwed over, but she says she just doesn't feel connected to her life in LA. And he's kind of like, what life in LA? You're never here. Like, you always go off to New York. Right. And she brings up that for the last 2 years, it's been all about you. And he says for the 3 years before that, it was all about you.
But I want to be like, isn't your job like just to manage him?
Right. But also, were those 3 years just about Samantha? Didn't she spend those 3 years getting him where he is now?
Right.
I'm not saying it was just about him for 5 years. I'm just saying like, I don't know. Yeah. So it's just sort of them, we're getting more into the fact that she's feeling very disconnected from her life in LA. And I believe this was a cut scene. Let me know if this sounds familiar. Samantha's on the phone with Carrie, explaining that she can't come back to New York for a while. Carrie's in a phone booth, because she still doesn't have a cell phone. And it's worth noting that in this scene, you couldn't see it, but just trust me, she's standing in a phone booth right across the street from the old Pastis, which therefore would make her right next to Samantha's old apartment.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway, fun. She and Smith are going to spend their weekends connecting. And we get to apparently Carrie's website is a mess, which tracks.
Yeah, it looks very like GeoCities.
Very much. No one listening knows what that means, but yes, they trust do. Us. Do they?
Yeah.
Show of hands, who knows GeoCities?
I don't see any hands, at least. Most of our listeners here like watched the show when it was on.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
She hasn't unpacked her closet? I feel like I'd actually put that in ahead of answering emails.
Well, maybe she has, like, clothes with her, you know.
Just, like enough. So, of course, the first email is from john@jjpny.com.
Yeah. And she wants...
And the email is simply, I don't know what to say.
She wants Louise to put all those emails somewhere where she never has to see them again.
But you can kind of see that Louise has a plan.
Yeah.
So we're shopping for Halloween stuff.
At Duane Reade.
Yeah, I think that was sort of purposeful. They didn't want them to be at Barney's. Like, they wanted them to be like, where would you just go if you needed something last minute? So right, they're at, like, a Duane Reade or something like that. Guess. And probably the Halloween store wasn't open when they were filming this.
The spirit of Halloween.
Oh, correct. And Miranda's dressing up. And there's some moderate shaming of moms who stay at home with kids.
Really?
Well, she just says, like, you know who decided we should dress up? Probably some mom who doesn't have a job.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, yeah, okay, well.
Miranda's got a lot going on.
It's true. This is also a chance for us to see the holidays we'd never seen before, if you think about that. That we've never seen Halloween or New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day.
I guess you're right, because it's eternal spring.
Correct. We've also moved Carrie into very dark looks and clothes. You'll notice that she's going to be dressed dark for a while now.
She's in mourning.
Yeah, and she what does she get to choose between?
Witch and sexy kitten.
The only two choices for women, witch and sexy kitten.
Oh, you just said a mouthful there, sister.
And Carrie brings up the email and, you know, maybe don't say anything until you know what you want to say. And about the I'm sorrys, and Steve's all about the I'm sorrys, and Carrie says, well, maybe he is.
Well, maybe so is Big.
Point taken.
Scary child hurtles by, and Carrie says it'll take more than that to scare her, and we... I don't know. I'm going to be insensitive for a minute, and I don't mean what I'm about to say, but Carrie has a moment of like, I can't believe this happened to me. And I guess I do have a moment where I think, you're still okay. Like, I know this is a bad thing that happened to you. I know it's a terrible thing. I'm being insensitive. I won't put any of that in there. I remember feeling a little exasperated
at moments.
You've been
pretty insensitive in this podcast. I wouldn't call this part of it. No, I think for sure that it's like, I think I understand it as I can't believe this happened to me, meaning more like I can because this is the way he behaves.
Right.
But yeah, and Miranda's kind of about to tell her.
Yeah, she's going over every detail, right. Every detail I can think of. And Miranda, yeah, you can see Miranda, and she's literally about to launch into it when Carrie sees I say, in movie and TV fashion, we get a distraction.
Carrie does not have good luck with magazines.
No. And also, is the model on the front of that Vogue the model who was the ex-girlfriend from the auction?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think it is. But they just kind of look similar. I thought it was funny that we didn't know who either one was. Yeah, and we have Carrie and Miranda going through the issue, and Carrie looks great.
Yeah.
And those are the real photos that were shot by Patrick Demarchier. I'm saying his name wrong, I'm sure. And then we get to the editor's notes.
Which is Carrie Bradshaw is still single and living in New York City.
And I wrote, because we've established that being single is the worst thing you can be.
Single and fabulous?
Question mark. So this is all part of the extended version where, so Charlotte and Lily arrive at Carrie's, and Charlotte has, you know, some words of comfort, and Lily has a tiny pumpkin, and they invite Carrie to go trick-or-treating. Yeah, and so Lily is dressed as Cinderella, not Mulan, which is what Charlotte wanted, and Charlotte's a cow, and Harry is Uncle Fester. The puppies are all dressed up as various religious figures. I think one is a pope, one is a priest, and one is something else. I don't really remember. But Carrie is the scariest. She's a jilted woman at 41. Like, okay, Carrie. And Vianne Cox lives in the building, if you know who that is. She's an actress. Oh, she was an actress from You've Got Mail and Erin Brockovich. She's the one who Erin Brockovich says is wearing...
Spoiler!
It's not. It's in every single thing where she says, all you got is two wrong feet. That's Vianne Cox. She was also in the original cast of Carolina Change. And she brings up the Vogue episode and is sorry. So at the next location, we like pan over and Lily's not wearing the Cinderella mask anymore. Carrie is. And it's a funny little haha. But anyways, that scene's not in the theatrical version. Instead, we get right to the salon.
Carrie is doing what every woman would do, and that's just dyeing her hair.
Well, I wrote SJP is fulfilling her nice and easy contract by going brunette. It's a wig, for the record. This is not her real hair. It does look, it's a great wig.
Yeah.
We get to the Astor Place Starbucks, and Louise has a Chanel bag and a new flip phone.
Mm-hmm. She's now 347.
And she's always been a 917 gal.
I thought she'd be a 212 person.
212 was a landline.
Right, but you could have gotten it as your cell phone.
The only person who's ever done that is your friend.
Oh.
I don't know a single other person who has ever been able to do that. Elise has a friend who was able to take his 212 landline number, which was, that was a New York City landline, and he got it transferred to be his cell phone number. I've never heard of a single person doing that. But I think part of that is because most people didn't go from landline to cell phone.
Right. Most people,
they went from landline to also cell phone.
Right. So most people that have lived in New York long enough to have a 212 landline number even.
Yeah, I think my original Harlem landline number was a 212, but I never had a 917. My first cell phone was a 646. So 917 was the original cell phone number, which I'm not convinced Carrie would have had because she didn't get a cell phone right away.
Yeah.
646 was like the Chelsea cell phone number that then became the new all over New York cell phone number, and then we went to 347. And I don't think it matters anymore. I don't
no,
know.
No, because
that
I have friends that have gotten cell phones later than this that have 917.
Oh, is that true? Interesting.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty
I think
sure.
People also get cell phones. People get cell phones like in LA or Michigan and just move to New York, and that's their cell phone number.
Right. Yeah, my cell phone
like
number.
No one really cares about that anymore.
Yeah, a friend of mine who didn't get a new phone until like 2010 has 917.
That's funny. So it just depends on when you get it, I guess.
Well, and they recycle numbers.
So Samantha gets a call from Carrie, and we have a brief old New York versus new New York conversation. And then Gilles emerges from the ocean.
Wait, are we going to talk about Samantha's sun hat?
Sure, we can.
That's it.
It's just a really big
sun
hat.
Yeah, I mean, it's like bigger than anything I've ever seen.
It's to be used as a prop, mostly.
Yeah.
And in this scene, Gilles emerges from the ocean, and Samantha brings up not cheating and how she doesn't cheat partly because she can't get over Steve's face at the night of the wedding party. Mm. And I think it's interesting that that's the thing that keeps her from cheating. And she brings up that Gilles is this guy that just has sex whenever he wants with whoever he wants, and sort of her realization that, like, Gilles is Samantha from 5 years ago.
Mm.
And Samantha has the line of, like, what's the point of having a hot guy next door if you can't have sex with him?
Yeah, and she's like, well, she has, like, guac mouth, and it's pretty gross. She's, like, eating guac and talking and...
But there are other reasons why a hot guy might live next door, just for the record.
Yeah, he could just live there.
Right. So I guess we see Samantha managing Smith's publicity, and her personal cook brings her out guacamole.
Yeah, it's gross.
See, we're going to get to it, because my next line is Dante emerges and begins to undress, and I realize that there's something different about me, because this scene mostly makes me want guacamole. I'm just saying.
Like, you're like, not that,
I like guacamole.
Yeah, but you're also retired.
That's true. Hung it up.
Yeah.
And I like that we have some full-on Sex and the City theme song here. Like, in the background, you have, you know, it's a little bit of a remix, but you have, like, the Sex and the City theme playing as Samantha decides to get out of the house to stay out of trouble.
And she has a horny dog.
Yeah, she passes by some rescue puppies, and we have Suzanne Cryer. She plays the rescue puppy woman, and I bring it up because she'd already done 3 seasons of a TV series called Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Okay.
But I guess it's just work is work. Like, yeah. You did a TV series, you still need, like, a one or two liner on a TV, on a movie. And she went on to be on Silicon Valley. Yeah, and so she keeps walking, but decides the Randy puppy is for her.
Yeah, of course.
And I also wrote, this is a very expensive distraction. Like, that's a lot of Gucci in the backseat of her car.
Oh, too much. Like, all those bags. I was like, yeah. Like, I still don't know how much money she has or how she's getting it, or I don't know.
Yeah, I guess enough to buy that much stuff. So we have Louise contemplating stealing Carrie's shoes.
Yeah.
And this is when, yeah, Carrie opens a box that contains her old wedding dress. So I'm assuming that Louise took the wedding dress and was like, I'm going to put this in a box and shove it in a closet somewhere.
Yeah, right. Because that box wouldn't have been in, like, a mover's box, because she was wearing it when she, you know.
Yeah. And she doesn't want to throw it out. But also, I am sort of like, why? Like, what are you going to do with it? Like, you're never going to wear it again. You're not going to be like, in my next wedding, maybe I'll wear this Vivian Westwood. I don't have the answer. I just don't know what you would ever do with that dress.
Well, you could do what Michaela does in How to Get Away with Murder.
What does she do?
They squirt ketchup all over it.
Which season is that? No one got there.
Ooh, yes, except for me and Mike. We finished the whole thing.
I'll just bury it deep in the back, like I did my feelings.
Do you miss him?
And, you know, she misses him every day and brings up the fact that she hasn't cried that much. And maybe there are only so many tears that one guy gets. And this prompts Louise to bring up the guy who broke up with her in St. Louis last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie realizes there's more than one broken heart in her closet. So out for a cocktail they go. And we're at Bemelman's Bar at Carlisle Hotel on East 76th.
You know who lived at the Carlisle?
Elaine Stritch?
Yep.
I did know. Good for me. And this is where we learn about Will, who said that he loved her but didn't think that she was the one. Which is clearly a hat tip to Mr. Big,
right.
You know. But Louise is not going to give up on love. And she gets a call. And Carrie calls it a booty call.
And she's like, it's not a booty call. He works at a restaurant. Which,
he's,
you know, to be
done.
Honest.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's true. And she says, have fun. That's what your 20s are for. Your 30s are to learn the lessons. And your 40s are to pay for the drinks.
In that case, I'll get another.
I'm going to say, I don't think that I'm a full decade behind, but I'm probably like 5 years behind.
You're not ready to pay
for the
drinks?
I think I'm still learning. I also think I'm still learning the lessons.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not quite there yet. So we get Carrie and Charlotte desk shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And this is mostly because Carrie reveals that Harry has told her that Charlotte isn't running.
And we find out that, you know, Charlotte's just nervous that something bad is going to happen. Her life's really good. She has a good life. And no offense, but everyone else's lives are falling apart. So something's bad going to happen, which my favorite line of the movie happens just now, where she says, sweetie, you shit your pants this year. Maybe you're done.
Yeah, it's good. It's a nice moment of catharsis.
You know, I was just going to say, it's like, it's such the simple thing, right? Because we're always looking for that one thing that's going to, like, when is it all going to fall apart is, like, the favorite game I like to play. And the, you know, Mike already knows this because my mind was blown. But the other day, someone just said to me, like, Elise, what if it all works out? And I was like, whoa. But it's so simple, but it's so completely mind-blowing to me. Like, right, what if it all worked out?
And I really, really do also love Carrie's line here where she says, "You can't stop being who you are because you're afraid."
Mm.
Those are some words to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to Charlotte and the puppies going running. And this is sort of our little transition as we go from fall into winter. And Luis is going through party invites, and Carrie tells her to hurry or she'll miss her plane.
And Luis got Carrie, "Meet me in St. Louis."
And Carrie's like, "If I'd known we were giving presents,
I'd give you this ugly AF Louis Vuitton bag."
Okay, that's totally what I wrote.
Really?
I wrote it's a Louis Vuitton box with a sort of ugly bag inside.
Yeah, hold on.
Like, I guess it was just a statement piece.
No, those are like what, so like during that time, I mean, and some people may still like them, I don't know, but during that time there was the signature Louis Vuitton bag, which was white with like the rainbow letters on it. But those bags were super popular, and that like size of them were, I mean, I don't have one anymore here to show you, but I used to have like a really awkward looking bag. So the made-to-order Vivienne Westwood wedding gown was $22,000. It would have cost her $30,000 to rent the room for 5 hours at the New York Public Library. Louise's Louis Vuitton monogram Firebird bag, that bag would have cost Carrie $5,400.
Yeah, apparently, also, for the record, this bag was not available until the day the movie came out. So now it's New Year's Eve, and Carrie is staying home with a cup of noodles.
Mm-hmm. And pearls. And actually, that looked like so cozy to me. The cup of noodles, the snow outside.
It did. I mean, it did. We'll get to why I don't love that she's choosing to do this. But Miranda's sending Brady off to be with Steve. But Brady has to go find his new Batman first.
Before that, she has the moment where she's like, at 12, what do? You do this, and then you kiss.
And Steve wonders if she has plans with the girls and says they're all doing their own thing this year. And he has this moment of never, you know, I never wanted to hurt you. And when, yeah, Brady comes back out and it's a happy new year, happy new year.
Kiss.
Cute little Brady tells them to kiss.
Yeah, I wrote again, F you, Steve.
Yeah, Miranda shuts and locks the door and you can see, you know, you can see the pain on her face.
Of course.
For the record, this whole segment was originally set on Christmas Eve. And it was much sadder. Like, it had a much, like, sadder ending. And Michael Patrick King just thought, like, you know what, let's make it New Year's Eve instead, and let's give them a little bit of, like, hope and happiness. Because we get to Carrie watching Meet Me in St. Louis, and stops because of the romance. I guess this also is, like, women talking about love or whatever, and Carrie's
also, like,
not
I can picture
it.
Carrie, like, just not into the movie. She doesn't strike me as a Judy queen.
She sort of glances at her computer, and the snow is coming down, and she has the word love typed in there.
She's also wearing her bedtime pearls.
Yeah. Yes. And then I believe this is an extended scene where Stanford calls her.
Yes.
And tells her to come out. And she's like, "I'm writing." And he's like, "You're not really writing." But she wants to avoid New Year's Eve. And let's take a quick moment to talk about New Year's Eve. Because New Year's Eve is one of those things that's never as fun as you want it to be, right?
Never.
Never.
The years that I'm working, I'm like, so here's what happens in my life, is I'm always like, I'm going to work, and so, or I'm not going to, I'm going to work, and it's going to be miserable, and blah, 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 and it's never as bad as I think it's going to be. And then the years I'm like, I have a New Year's off, I have, like, nothing to do, and I'm like, why didn't I work?
Yeah, I'm thinking of, like, the 1 year that I didn't work New Year's Eve, and it was, like, no kidding, one of the worst nights of my life.
Okay, I take it back. I did when, I spent New Year's Eve at the Standard because my friend was working there a few years ago. And we had, actually, I spent 2 New Year's Eves at the Standard. And those two were both, like, super fun. Because I was somewhere, I was with my friends, like, it wasn't crazy because, like, we, quote unquote, like, knew someone, right? So, like, we had a table, we didn't have to worry about, like, trying to get something. Like, everything was kind of planned. And that was fun to get dressed up and go out. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think the one New Year's Eve that I didn't work, I had just started a new job and I didn't really know anybody there. Plus, they were all working. And I think that, like, one of my best friends had gone home for New Year's Eve. I think another friend and I weren't speaking to each other. And it was bad. I had nothing to do. Like, I went into my new job and, like, sat at the bar for, like, 5 minutes and then was like, I don't know these people. I don't know why I'm sitting here. And I ended up going home and watching a movie, and it was honestly really depressing, and I've worked basically every year since then and had a much better time. So she just says that she finds out being asleep at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Carrie in bed as the snow is falling and the phone rings.
It's Miranda.
Oh, for the record, though, there's a clock sitting on the floor, one of those, like, flip clocks. know what I'm talking about? Where, like, the numbers, like, flip forward. Yeah. I'm sure there's a word for it. And it, so that clock had been on the series, but they had rented it from, like, a clock collector. So the whole time the series was going, they were renting it from this guy and then gave it back to him when the series was over. And then when they went to do the movie, they wanted it back. And apparently he was like, well, here's my chance, and was going to charge them a huge fee to use this clock. And so instead, they went on eBay and found it for $40. Mm. So there's a little clock story for you.
I was looking for the clown table the whole time. I never saw it.
I think it's gone. For the record, every time I watch the series now, clown table.
Yeah, it's just there.
It's all that I can see. Yeah. It's like in, it's all, it's there all the time.
Yeah, it's like, is that Miranda? No, it's the clown table.
No, it's the clown table.
Yeah.
All the time.
It's like, oh wait, there wasn't a fifth character?
It's the clown table.
Yeah.
So it's Miranda. She's alone with Chinese food. And Carrie says she was asleep, and Miranda apologizes. And I'm like, Carrie, get out of bed.
Yeah. Number one, you're going to choke on that necklace. And number two, your friend needs you, and she always comes over for you. And Miranda's like, no, no, it's fine.
And the music changes, and we have another montage. And once again, this was originally a montage to Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Mm.
And everyone was sad. So it's a little bit different here. So I'm going to go through the points, the moments point by point. So we have Carrie putting on an impromptu New Year's Eve outfit, including her fur.
Mm-hmm. And heels.
And a sparkly hat. We have the Goldenblatt family at happily at home with noisemakers.
Mm-hmm.
Samantha and Smith are on the West Coast celebrating the East Coast New Year's Eve, which I also enjoy. We have Stanford stumbling upon an old nemesis and now friend.
Yep. And they kiss.
And it's nice. He looks, at first, they're just excited to see each other, which is nice because, you know, they didn't like each other. And right. He has a moment of like, oh, I'm so glad you're here. We have Carrie emerging from the subway, and the New Yorker wonders. And the New Yorker in me wonders if she took the green line to the orange line or just walked to the orange line. But that's neither here nor there.
Mm.
This next line, I literally put: we cut to Elise back home. Nope. We cut to Louise back home, and in walks Will, and this is Joshua Henry,
who we know from.
Yeah, he was in the revivals of both Violet and Carousel. He's a 3-time Tony nominee. He does a lot of stage work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, play it cool, Louise.
Mm-hmm. Keep it cool, baby.
She like stares right. I'm like, come on, keep it together. We have a moment with Big. And the thing about this moment is that him eating in this restaurant is where he was sitting and eating in the cut scene that I talked about way back in like part one.
Mm.
When Carrie brought up getting married at a bigger venue, mm-hmm, with more people. Mm-hmm. So it sort of symbolizes was their space and he's there alone, which doesn't come across when you just watch it. But
right.
That's what that was. We have Miranda opening a fortune cookie and looking very defeated. And then Carrie arrives and truly I cry every time.
Well, before I'm mad we don't know what the fortune cookie says.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, why do you cry every time?
It just gets me that like you're not alone, you know?
You're not alone,
Miranda
Mike.
Opens the door. I don't know if that's true. And it's midnight. She's there just in time for midnight. And yes, Stanford and Anthony kiss. And I wrote, I guess it's because Australian guy didn't make it into the movie. So The only two gay guys we know, of course, have to end up making out.
Well, that's usually what happens, Mike. Don't you know that? When people are like, oh my God, you're gay. I have a gay friend.
We just get married now. I don't know why we're even wasting our time. And we get Harry and Charlotte in a bed scene again.
Mm-hmm.
Louise and Will are awkwardly next to each other at a party. And then I wrote, Big is alone because choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Samantha and Smith share a kiss and the horny dog is looking on.
And I want dumplings.
Okay, my next note is, most importantly, Miranda and Carrie are together and I want dumplings.
Yeah, I wrote that. I have Marcos and Stanford kissed, weird, pervy dog, I want dumplings. That's my notes.
Marcos and Stanford.
Marcus.
Okay. But it's not even Marcus.
It's Anthony. And I wrote Marcos.
So much about that is a fun adventure.
Why did I write Marcos? I meant Marcus, but it's actually Anthony. Okay, you guys, I have a fun one for you.
That feels right on track.
Yeah. So this is a fun one that happened on our, Mike and I are on a text thread with some friends. And the other day, someone was talking about, who are you guys talking about? Stranger Things, Winona Ryder. They were talking about Winona Ryder, and I said, Oh, yes. I always get her confused with Nev Campbell.
Okay, this is actually not... Wait, is that the order that it happened in?
Oh, I don't know what it said.
No. We were talking about Winona Ryder, and you said I always get her confused with Naomi Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
I said, that doesn't make any sense. And then it took us a really long time to get there.
Because I meant Nev Campbell.
Yes. That was a much shorter adventure than the adventure actually was, though. It took us a long time to get there. A blonde was also involved at one point.
Yeah, I don't know who anyone is.
And that is going to be the end of part three.
Oh.
We're going to come back in the new year with part four. We'll be back next week with that one.
In the new year?
Well, because it's New Year's Eve in this episode.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
So not in real life. In real life,
you're like,
next
sorry,
week.
Guys, you're going to wait like 6 more months and we're going to have another episode for you. So that's it.
No, next week with our final part of the movie.
Wah, wah. All right. All right. Bye.
See you then. Bye. If you've just stumbled upon this podcast, you should know that Elise and I have done over 100 episodes covering the entire Sex and the City series, so check those out and make sure to change your settings to play in sequential order. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love it if you would share this podcast with someone. Put a link on Facebook or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe and let's all take care of each other.
Yeah, she probably didn't pack her whole. Yeah.
Right.
Pack her whole.
And of course, she did not pack her whole. You guys just always pack your whole. You never know when you're going to need it.
Yeah, it's like a cream puff in a keyhole.
Carrie's at home, and Charlie and Lily arrive, and Charlotte has some words of wisdom about, Charlie. You know. Charlie. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Oh. Remember when I called it a haircutting place?
Huh?
Remember when I was like, she's at a hair cutting place.
Yeah, I love that.
So we have Carrie putting on an impromptu New York Eve outfit, including her fur.
New Year's Eve.
What did I say?
New York Eve.
Oh, okay.
I like New York Eve, though. That's what we call New Jersey. Sorry.
New York Eve.
The New Jersey people are going to get mad.